Meanwhile, the Dalmatian army was swinging along the road in fine style. Though cold, the night was very still. The pups were rested and hopeful, and the fact that a tired little dog could take a rest with the cad pig in her cart made tired little dogs feel less tired. Indeed, Mrs. at first had to insist on the smaller pups taking turns to rest. But progress was not really fast. There were so many pauses while the pups who pulled the cart were changed, pauses while pups got in and out of the cart, and every half mile the whole army had a rest. Still, all went wonderfully well until they were within half a mile of the village where they were to spend the day. There was a hint of dawn in the sky now, but Pongo felt sure they could reach the village before it was dangerously light. He quickened the pace slightly and told the pups to think of breakfast ahead of them at the bakery. It was soon after this that the cad pig called out, "Look, little painted houses on wheels!" Pongo saw them at the same moment, and he knew they were not houses, they were caravans. He had seen them once when out with Mr. Dearly, and had heard Mr. Dearly say that gypsies lived in caravans, and gypsies sometimes stole valuable dogs. "Halt!" said Pongo instantly. Could they get past the caravans without being seen? He wasn't going to risk it. Between them and the nearest caravan was an open gate. He would lead the puppies through it and take them through the fields until they were well past the caravans. Swiftly he gave his instructions, which were handed on from pup to pup. "We are to keep dead quiet and follow Pongo through the gate." And thus did the owner of one of the keenest brains in dogdom make one of his few mistakes. For in the caravan nearest to them, an old gypsy woman was awake and looking out of the little back window. She saw the approaching Dalmatians and at once woke her husband. He was beside her at the window just as Pongo led the way into the field. The old gypsy woman never read newspapers, so she knew nothing about the stolen puppies. But she knew that here were many valuable dogs. And she knew something else, which Pongo did not know. There is a connection between Dalmatians and gypsies. Many people believe that it was the gypsies who first brought Dalmatians to England long, long ago. And nothing like as long ago as that, there were gypsies who travelled round England with Dalmatians trained to do tricks. And these performing dogs earned money for the gypsies. The old woman could remember such dogs, and she thought how splendid it would be if all these Dalmatians could be trained as money earners. "Quick, close the gate!" she said to her husband. She spoke in the strange gypsy language which is called Romany. "The only other way out of that field is through a break in the hedge. I will rouse the camp, and we will all stop the dogs there and catch them." In less than 2 minutes, the whole gypsy encampment was awake. Children cried, dogs barked, horses neighed. It was still so dark that it took Pongo 5 minutes to find the break in the hedge, and when he found it, he also found the way barred. All the gypsies were there with sticks and ropes. "Back to the gate, as fast as you can," he cried to the pups. But when they reached the gate, it was closed. They were trapped. Pongo barked loudly, hoping that some gypsy dog might help him. Many gypsy dogs barked in answer, but they'd all been shut up in the caravans in case they should fight the Dalmatians. In any case, they only barked in Romany, so they could not understand a word Pongo said. But someone else did. Suddenly, Pongo heard the high neigh of a horse close at hand. And, oh, most wonderful, the horse could neigh normally as well as in Romany. It understood Pongo, and he understood it. Horses are nearly always friendly to Dalmatians, perhaps because of those days when Dalmatians were trained to follow carriages. This horse was not old enough to remember such days, but he took an instant liking to Pongo, Mrs., and all the pups. If these pleasant creatures wished to come out of the field, nothing could be easier. He strolled up, opened the gate with his long, strong teeth, and swung it back. Out poured the puppies. "Lead them past the caravans as fast as you can," Pongo shouted to Mrs., and waited to see the last pup out of the field.
"What a very large family you and your wife have," said the horse. "My wife and I have never had more than the one. Well, good luck to you."
He waved aside Pongo's thanks, and then, being a very tidy horse, he carefully closed the gate again. So never did the gypsies, all waiting at the break in the hedge, know how their prisoners got away. Helter-skelter along the road went Missus, the puppies, and finally Pongo. The pups who drew the cadpig's cart stuck faithfully to their task. The shut-in Romany dogs heard them and shook the caravans in their efforts to get out. Volleys of furious barking came from the little windows. "The caravans bark, but the dogs move on," remarked Pongo, when he felt they were out of danger. A few minutes later, they reached the village where they were to sleep. The sheepdog's friend, a handsome collie, was waiting to welcome them. "No talk until you're safely hidden," he said. "It's almost light." Quickly they followed him across the village green to three old gabled houses. The baker's was in the middle between the butcher's and the chimney sweep's. The baker and the butcher and the sweep were all widowers, and, as it was Sunday, had already gone to spend Christmas with their married daughters, which was just as well. The baker's shop would not have been nearly big enough to house all the pups, but luckily there was a large bakehouse at the back, and soon every pup was safely in and enjoying a splendid sausage roll. Pongo and Missus chatted to the collie while they ate. He shook his head worriedly when he heard about the gypsies. "A narrow escape," he said. "The trouble is that Dalmatians are such noticeable dogs. 99 of you together are spectacular, though I mean it as a compliment. You'd be so much safer if you were black." "Like that nice little pup over there," said Missus.
"What pup?"
The collie looked across the bakehouse, then said sharply, "That pup doesn't belong in this village. Who are you, my lad? Where have you come from?" The black pup did not answer. Instead, he came running to Missus and butted her in the stomach.
"Here, hold hard, young man," said Missus.
Then she gasped.
"Goodness, it is Roly-Poly."
The fat puppy, who was always getting into mischief, had found his way into a shed at the back of the sweep's house and had a fight with a bag of soot.
"Mercy, you'll need some washing," said his mother.
Then it was that one of the keenest brains in dogdom had one of its brainiest waves.
"Roly-Poly," said Pongo, "was there a lot of soot at the sweep's?"
"Bags and bags," said Roly-Poly.
"Then we are all going to be black dogs," said Pongo.
"Your husband is a genius," said the collie to Missus, as he showed them all into the sweep shed. There was any amount of soot waiting to have done with it whatever sweeps do with soot.
10 dogs forward at a time," commanded Pongo. "Pups, roll. Pups, rub noses."
In a very short time, there were 97 pitch-black pups.
"And now, my love," said Pongo to Missus, "let's take a roll in the soot."
Frankly, Missus did not fancy it. She hated soiling her gleaming white hair and losing its smart contrast with her beautiful black spots. But when Pongo had helped her with the final touches, he said,
"Why, Missus, as a black dog, you're slimmer than ever. You're positively svelte."
And then she felt much better.
Then Pongo said, "How does soot suit me?"
"Soot suits you beautifully," said Missus, and all the pups roared with laughter at her mistake.
Then they all went back to the bakehouse and settled down to sleep. The collie said he would call them as soon as it was dark. They would only have 5 miles to go to another bakery, but he felt they should get the journey over early, as he'd heard there might be snow.
"But there may be cars on the road until late, as it's Christmas Eve and Sunday," he told them,
"so you must go by the fields. I shall escort you. Rest well now."
Poor Missus. When she awoke in the late afternoon and looked around her, she dissolved into sooty tears.
"I can't tell one pup from the other, now they're black," she moaned.
But she soon found she could, though she could never have explained how she managed it. Another meal had been organized, but it was not all that could have been wished, because the butcher had meanly locked up his shop.
"This clears the bakery out," said the collie, carrying in the last stale loaf. "But there will be a good supper waiting for you, and the journey oughtn't to take more than 3 or 4 hours.
He then went off to see if there was any news coming in by the twilight barking. After half an hour or so, Pongo began to feel anxious. It was quite dark now. They ought to be off. What was delaying the collie?
Listen, said Mrs. suddenly. Very, very faintly, they could hear the collie barking. He was calling Pongo's name again and again. Pongo and Mrs. ran out of the bakehouse to the little yard at the back. Now they could hear the collie more clearly, but he was obviously some way off. Pongo barked in answer to him. Then, swiftly, the collie told them what had happened. He was locked in a house across the green with no hope of getting out. The postmistress had promised to look after him while the baker was away for Christmas. She had decided it was too cold a night for a dog to be out, hauled him in, and gone out for the evening. He had tried every door and every window, but could undo none of them. It was impossible for him to escort the Dalmatians as he had promised. But you can't miss your way, Pongo, he barked. Out over the field at the back of the bakehouse, and straight on for 5 miles. Pongo told him not to worry, but the poor collie was most unhappy. Here I am, locked in with a warm fire and a good supper, and powerless to help you. Both Pongo and Mrs. told him to eat the supper and enjoy the fire, and thanked him for all he had done. And now, off we go, said Pongo, bringing the pups out of the bakehouse. And no straggling, because it would be very easy to lose a black pup on a dark night. But it was not really a very dark night, for already the moon was rising and the stars were out. There was one specially large, bright star. The collie said straight ahead, and that star is straight ahead, said Pongo, so we'll steer by it. He was thankful they were going by way of the fields and not by the road, for he remembered that Cruella had told the Baden brothers she would come down tomorrow night to count the bodies. Now it was tomorrow night, and the great zebra-striped car would be somewhere on the road from London to Suffolk. How terrible it would be to meet it! He imagined the glare from the headlights, imagined Cruella driving straight at the army of panic-stricken puppies. Yes, he would certainly avoid the roads. But even so, it was frightening to know that Cruella might be quite near. He put the thought from his mind as he and Mrs. got the pups into marching order. Their way lay through grassy meadows, over which the cadpig's cart trundled smoothly. At every hedge and ditch, Pongo paused and counted the pups to see none had strayed, and Mrs. changed the pups who drew the cart and the pups who rested in it. Already, even the smallest puppies were getting hardier. Even the cadpig got out of the cart and walked 3 fields before getting in again. Soon we shall be able to do 10 miles a day, said Pongo. They had travelled about 3 miles when the first disaster of the night happened. There was a sudden bump and a wild squeal from the cadpig. A wheel had come off the little blue cart. Pongo saw at once that the cart could be mended. A wooden peg which fixed the hub of the wheel to the axle had come out. But could he ever, using his teeth, put this peg back? He tried and failed. Could the cadpig manage without the cart? He whispered to Mrs. Mrs. shook her head. Walking 3 fields had been enough for her smallest daughter, and her other daughters could not walk more than a mile without a rest. Then mend the cart I must, said Pongo, and you must help me by holding the wheel in position. They tried and tried without success. Then, while they were resting for a moment, Mrs. noticed that many of the pups were shivering. They'd better keep warm by running races, said Pongo. But that would tire them, said Mrs. Couldn't they all go to that barn over there? They could just see a big tiled roof 2 short fields away, not very clearly, because the moon was behind clouds. It was this lack of light which made it so hard to mend the cart. That's a good idea, said Pongo. And when the cart's mended, we can bring it along and call for them all. Mrs. said the cadpig had better stay in the cart and keep warm in the hay. But the cadpig wanted to go with the others and see the barn. She felt sure she could walk 2 short fields. So Mrs. let her go. 2 strong pups, the right size to draw the cart, stayed behind. They said they did not mind the cold. So 95 pups, led by Lieutenant Lucky, set off briskly for the barn. But when they got there, it did not look at all like the barn at the sheepdog's farm. It was built of grey stone and had long windows, some with coloured glass in them. And at one end was a tower.
Why, there's a folly,
said the Cadpig, remembering the Tower of the Folly at Hell Hall. Lucky was looking for a door, but when he found one it was firmly shut. He told the pups to wait for him while he went round the building looking for some other way in. The Cadpig did not wait.
"Come on," she said to her devoted brother Patch. "I want to look at that folly."
And when they got to the tower, they saw a narrow door that was not quite closed. It was too heavy for them to push, but they could just squeeze through. Inside, this tower was nothing like the one at Hell Hall, and it opened into the grey stone building.
"No hay in this barn," said the Cadpig.
She had counted on the hay for warmth, but she soon found she was warm enough without it, for there was a big stove alight. It had a long iron pipe for a chimney, which went right up through the raftered ceiling. The moon was out again now, and its light was streaming in through the tall windows, so that the clear glass made silver patterns on the stone floor, and the coloured glass made blue, gold, and rose patterns. The Cadpig patted one of the coloured patterns with a delicate paw.
"I love this barn," she said.
Patch said, "I don't think it is a barn," but he liked it as much as the Cadpig did. They wandered around, and suddenly they made a discovery. Whatever this mysterious place was, it was certainly intended for puppies, for in front of every seat, and there were many seats, was a puppy-sized dog bed, padded and most comfortable.
"Why, it's just meant for us all to sleep in," said the Cadpig. "I'll tell the other pups," said Patch, starting for the door.
A glad cry from the Cadpig called him back.
"Look! Look! Television!"
But it was not like the television at Hell Hall. It was much larger, and the figures on the screen did not move or speak. Indeed, it was not a screen. The figures were really there, on a low platform, humans and animals, most lifelike, though smaller than in real life. They were in a stable, above which was one bright star.
"Look at the little humans kneeling," said Patch. "And there's a kind of a cow," said the Cadpig,
remembering the cows at the farm who'd given all the pups milk.
"And a kind of a horse," said Patch, remembering the helpful horse who had let them all out of the field. "No dogs," said the Cadpig. "What a pity. But I like it much better than ordinary television. Only I don't know why."
Then they heard Lucky and the others who'd found their way in. Soon, every pup was curled up on a comfortable dog bed and fast asleep. Except the Cadpig. She had dragged along one of the dog beds by its most convenient little carpet ear and was sitting on it, wide awake, gazing and gazing at this new and far more beautiful television. Once the moon came out from behind the clouds, Pongo managed to mend the wheel. Oh, the feeling of satisfaction when the peg slipped into place! Mrs., too, felt proud. Had she not held the wheel? She, a dog who had never understood machinery? Quickly, the two waiting pups seized the crossbar in their mouths. Then off they all went to the barn. But as they drew nearer, Pongo saw this was no barn. "Surely they can't have gone in there," he said to Mrs.
"Why not, if they were cold?" said Mrs. "And they're far too young to know they would not be welcome."
Pongo and Mrs. both knew that humans did not like dogs to go into buildings which had towers and tall, narrow windows. They had no idea why, and had at first been a little hurt when told firmly to wait outside. But Mrs. Dearly had once said, "We would love you to come in if it was allowed, and I would go in far oftener if you could." So it was obviously one of those mysterious things, such as no one, not even humans, ever being allowed to walk on certain parts of the grass in Regent's Park.
"We must get them out quickly," said Pongo, "and go on with our journey."
They soon found the door in the tower, which the biggest pups had pushed wide open. Because Mrs. had always been left outside, she disliked these curious buildings with towers and high windows. But the minute she got inside, she changed her mind. This was a wonderful place. So peaceful, and somehow so welcoming. "But where are the pups?" she said, peering all around. She saw lots of black patches on the moonlit floor, but had quite forgotten that all the pups were now black. Then she remembered, and as she drew nearer to the sleeping pups, tears sprang to her eyes.
"Look! Look at all the puppy beds!" she cried. "What good people must live here!"
"It can't be the kind of place I thought it was," said Pongo. He was about to wake the puppies when Mrs. stopped him.
"Let me sit by the stove for a little while," she said.
"Well, not too long, my dear," said Pongo. He need not have worried. Mrs. only sat still for a few minutes. Then she got up, shook herself, and said brightly,
"Let us start now. Things are going to be all right."
An hour or so later, just before the evening service, the verger said to the vicar, "I think there must be something wrong with the stove, sir." On every hassock, he had found a small, circular patch of soot.
"Last lap before supper," said Pongo, as they started off again across the moonlit fields. It was the most cheering thing he could have said, for the 97 puppies were now extremely hungry. He had guessed this because he was hungry himself, and so was Mrs. But she was feeling too peaceful to mind. They went on for nearly 2 miles. Then Pongo saw a long row of cottage roofs ahead across the fields.
"This should be it," he said.
"What is that glow in the sky beyond the rooftops?" asked Mrs.
Pongo was puzzled. He had seen such a glow in the sky over towns which had many lights, but never over a village. And this was a very bright glow. "Perhaps it's a larger place than we expected it to be," he said, and did not feel it would be safe to go any nearer until some dog came to meet them. He called a halt and barked news of their arrival. He was answered at once by a bark that said,
"Wait where you are! I am coming!"
And though he did not tell Mrs., Pongo felt there was something odd about this bark that answered his. For one thing, there were no cheerful words of welcome. Soon, a graceful red setter came dashing towards them. They guessed, even before she spoke, that something was very wrong.
"The bakery's on fire!" she gasped.
The blaze, due to a faulty chimney, had begun only a few minutes before. The fire engine had not yet arrived. No one had been hurt, but the bakehouse was full of flames and smoke. All the food spread out for the Dalmatians was burned.
"There's nothing for you to eat, and nowhere for you to sleep," moaned the poor setter. She was hysterical. "And the village street's full of people."
She looked pitifully at Mrs.
"All your poor hungry puppies."
The strange thing was that Mrs. felt quite calm. She tried to comfort the setter, saying they would go to some barn.
"But no arrangements are made," wailed the setter, "and there's no spare food anywhere. All the village dogs brought what they could to the bakery."
Just then came a shrill whistle.
"My pet's calling me," said the setter. "He's the doctor here. There's no dog at the bakery, so I was chosen to arrange everything, because I took first prize in a dog show. And now I've failed you."
"You have not failed," said Mrs. "No one could say the fire was act of dog. Go back to your pet and don't worry. We shall simply go on to the next village."
"Really?"
said the setter, gasping again, but with relief. Mrs. kissed her on the nose.
"Off with you, my dear, and don't give the matter another thought. And thank you for all you did."
The whistle came again, and the setter ran off, wildly waving her feathered tail.
"Feather-brained as well as feather-tailed," said Pongo.
"Just very young," said Mrs. gently. "I doubt if she's had a family yet. Well, on to the next village."
"Thank you for being so brave, dear Mrs.," said Pongo.
"But where is the next village?"
"In the country, there are villages in every direction," said Mrs. brightly. Desperately worried though he was, Pongo smiled lovingly at her. Then he said, "We will go to the road now."
"But what about traffic, Pongo?"
"We shall not be very long on the road," said Pongo. Then he told her what he had decided. Even if the next village should only be a few miles away, many of the pups were too tired and too hungry to get there. Some of them were already asleep on the frozen ground. And every minute it got colder.
"And even if we could get to the next village,
Where should we sleep, Mrs.? What should we eat, with no plans made ahead? We must give in, my dear. Come, wake the pups. Quick march, everyone! The waking pups whimpered and shivered, and Mrs. saw that even the strongest pups were now wretchedly cold. So she helped Pongo to make them all march briskly. Then she whispered, "But how do we give in, Pongo?" Pongo said, "We must go into the village and find the police station." Mrs. stared at him in horror. "No, Pongo, no! The police will take the puppies from us!" "But they will feed them, Mrs. And perhaps we shall be kept together until Mr. Dearly has been told about us. They will have read the papers. They will know we are the missing Dalmatians." "But we are not Dalmatians any more, Pongo," cried Mrs. "We are black. They will think we are ordinary stray dogs. And we are illegal. 99 dogs without collars. We shall be put in prison." "No, Mrs." But Pongo was shaken. He had forgotten they were now black dogs. Suppose the police did not recognize them? Suppose the Dearlys were never told about them? What happened to stray dogs that no one claimed? "Please, Pongo, I beg you," cried Mrs. "Let us go on with our journey. I know it will be all right." They had now reached the road and were on the edge of the village. Pongo was faced with a terrible choice, but it still seemed to him wiser to trust the police than to lead the hungry, exhausted puppies into the bitter winter night. "Mrs., dear Mrs., we must go to the police station," he said, and turned towards the village. They could now see the burning bakery, and at that moment a huge flame leapt up through the roof. By its light, Pongo saw the whole village street, with the villagers making a human chain to hand along buckets of water. And he also saw something else, something which made him stop dead, shouting, "Halt!" at the top of his bark. In front of the burning bakery was a great striped black and white car, and with it was Cruella de Vil, standing right up on the roof of the car where she had climbed so as to get a good view of the fire. Her white face and absolutely simple white mink cloak no longer looked white. From head to foot she was bathed in the red-gold flicker of the flames, and as they leapt higher and higher, she clapped her hands in delight. The next instant, there was a wild clamour of bells as the fire engine arrived at last. The noise, the flames, and above all, the sight of Cruella were too much for many of the puppies. Squealing in terror, they turned and fled, with Pongo, Mrs. and Lucky desperately trying to call them to order. Fortunately, the clamour from the fire engine prevented anyone in the village hearing the barking and yapping. And after a little while, the terrified pups obeyed Pongo's orders and stopped their headlong flight. They were very shamefaced, as Pongo told them that, though he quite understood how they had felt, they must never, never behave in such a panic-stricken way, and must always, always obey orders instantly. Then he praised the pups who had stuck to the cadpig's cart, praised Patch for staying close to the cadpig, rescued Roly-Poly from a ditch, and counted the pups carefully. He did all this as hurriedly as possible, for he knew now that they must press on with their journey. There was no way they could get to the police station without passing Cruella de Vil. Their plight was now worse than ever. They not only had to face the dangers of hunger and cold, there was the added danger of Cruella. They knew from the direction her car was facing that their enemy must have already been to Hell Hall, learned that they had escaped, and now be on her way back to London. At any moment, she might leave the fire and overtake them. If only they could have left the road and travelled by the fields again. But there were now woods on either side of the road, woods so thick that the army could not have kept together. "But we can hide in there if we see the car's headlights," said Pongo, and explained this to the puppies. Then the army was on the march again. "At least the pups are warm now," said Mrs., "and they have forgotten how tired and hungry they are. It will be all right, Pongo." The pace was certainly good for a couple of miles. Then it got slower and slower. "The puppies will have to rest," said Mrs., "and this is a good place for it." There was now a wide grassy verge to the road. The moment Pongo called a halt, the pups sank down on the frosty grass. Many of them at once fell asleep. "They ought not to sleep," said Pongo anxiously. "Let them for a little while," said Mrs. The cad pig was not asleep. She sat up in her cart and said,
Will there be a barn soon, with kind cows and warm milk?
I'm sure there will be something nice, said Mrs. Snuggle down in your hay, my darling. Pongo, how strangely quiet it is. They could no longer hear any sounds from the village. No breath of wind rustled the grass, or stirred the trees. The world seemed frozen into a silvery, silent stillness. Something soft and fluffy touched Pongo's head. Something that puzzled him. Then, as he realized what it was, Mrs. whispered,
Look, Pongo! Look at the puppies!
Tiny white dots were appearing on the sooty black coats. Snow had begun to fall. Mrs. said, smiling, Instead of being white pups with black spots, they are turning into black pups with white spots. Only soon they will be all white. How soft and gentle the snow is. Pongo was not smiling. He cried,
If they sleep on until it has covered them, they will never wake. They will freeze to death beneath that soft, gentle snow. Wake up, pups! Wake up!
By now, every pup but Lucky and the cad pig had fallen into a deep, exhausted sleep. Lucky helped his parents to rouse them, and the cad pig helped too, sitting up in her cart and yapping piercingly. The poor pups begged to be left to sleep, and those who tottered onto their feet soon tottered off them again.
We shall never get them going, said Pongo despairingly.
For a moment, the cad pig stopped yapping, and there was a sudden silence. Then, from the village behind them, came the strident blare of the loudest motor horn in England. The pups sprang up, their exhaustion driven away by terror.
To the woods! Cried Pongo.
Then he saw that the woods were now protected by wire netting, through which not even the smallest pup could squeeze, and there was no ditch to hide in. But he could see that the woods ended not very far ahead.
We must go on, he cried. There may be fields, there may be a ditch.
The horn sounded again repeatedly. Pongo guessed that the fire engine had put out the fire, and now Cruella was scattering the villagers as she drove on her way. Already she would be less than 2 miles behind them, and the great striped car could travel 2 miles in less than 2 minutes. But the woods were ending. There were fields ahead.
To the fields, cried Pongo. Faster, faster.
The pups made a great spurt forward, then fell back in dismay. For though the woods ended, the wire netting still continued on both sides of them. There was still no way off the road. And the horn sounded again, louder and nearer.
Nothing but a miracle can save us now, said Pongo.
Then we must find a miracle, said Mrs. firmly.
Pongo, what is a miracle?
It was at that moment that they suddenly saw, through the swirling snow, a very large van drawn up on the road ahead of them. The tailboard was down, and the inside of the van was lit by electric light. And sitting there, on a newspaper, was a Staffordshire Terrier with a short clay pipe in his mouth. That is, it looked like a clay pipe. It was really made of sugar, and at once had a fine long stem. Now the Staffordshire drew the bowl of the pipe into his mouth and ate it. Then he looked up from the newspaper, which he was reading as well as sitting on, and stared in astonishment at the army of pups rushing helter-skelter towards him.
Help! 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 Barked Pongo. We are being pursued! How soon can we get off this road?
I don't know, mate, barked back the Staffordshire. You better hide in my van!
The miracle! The miracle!
Gasped Pongo to Mrs.
Quickly, pups, jump into the nice miracle, said Mrs.,
who now thought miracle was another name for removal van. A swarm of pups surged up the tailboard. Up went the cad pig's cart, pulled from the front and pushed from behind. Then more and more pups jumped or scrambled up until the entire army was in.
Golly, there are a lot of you, said the Staffordshire,
who had flattened himself against the side of the van.
Lucky the van was empty. Who's after you, mate? Old Nick?
Some relation of his, I think, said Pongo.
The strident horn sounded again, and now 2 strong headlights could be seen in the distance.
And she's in that car.
Then I'd better put the light off,
said the Staffordshire, neatly working the switch with his teeth.
That's better.
Pongo's heart seemed to miss a beat. Suddenly he knew that letting the pups get into the van had been a terrible mistake.
But the car's headlights will shine in, he gasped. Our enemy will see the pups.
Not black pups in a black van, said the Staffordshire. Not if I close their eyes.
Oh, excellent suggestion.
Quickly, Pongo gave the command.
Pups, close your eyes, or they will reflect the car's headlights and shine like jewels in the darkness. Close them, and do not open them, however frightened you are, until I give the word. Remember, your lives may depend on your obedience now. Close your eyes, and keep them closed.
Instantly, all the puppies closed their eyes tight. And now the car's headlights were less than a quarter of a mile away.
Close your eyes, missus, said Pongo.
And don't forget to close your own, mate, said the Staffordshire.
Now the car's powerful engine could be heard. The strident horn blared again and again, as if telling the van to get out of the way. Louder and louder grew the noise from the engine. The glare from the headlights was now so intense that Pongo was conscious of it through his tightly shut eyelids. Would the pups obey orders, or would terror make them look towards the oncoming car? Pongo himself had a wild desire to do so, and a wild fear that the car was going to crash into the van. The noise of horn and engine grew deafening. The glare seemed blinding even to closed eyes. Then, with a roar, the great striped car was on them and past them, roaring on and on into the night.
You may open your eyes now, my brave, obedient pups, cried Pongo. And indeed they deserved praise, for not one eye had been opened.
That was quite a car, mate, said the Staffordshire to Pongo. You must have quite an enemy. Who are you, anyway? The local pack of soot hounds?
Then he suddenly stared very hard at Pongo's nose.
Well, swelp me if it isn't soot. And it doesn't fool me. You're the missing Dalmatians. Want a lift back to London?
A lift. A lift all the way in this wonderful van. Pongo and Mrs. could hardly believe it. Swiftly, the pups settled to sleep on the rugs and blankets used for wrapping round furniture.
But why are there so many pups? Said the Staffordshire. The newspapers don't know the half of it, nor the quarter, neither. They think there are only 15 missing.
Pongo started to explain, but the Staffordshire said they would talk during the drive to London.
My pets will be out of that house there any minute. Fancy us doing a removal on a Sunday and Christmas Eve. But the van broke down yesterday, and we had to finish the job.
How many days will the journey to London take? Asked Mrs.
Days, said the Staffordshire. It won't take much more than a couple of hours, if I know my pets. They want to get home to finish decorating their kids' Christmas trees. Shush, now. Pipe down, both of you.
A large man in a rough apron was coming out of a nearby house. Mrs. thought, as soon as one danger is past, another threatens. Would they all be turned out of the miracle? The Staffordshire, wagging his tail enthusiastically, hurled himself at the man's chest, nearly knocking him down.
Look out, Bill, said the man over his shoulder. The canine cannonball's feeling frisky.
Bill was an even larger man, but even he was shaken by the Staffordshire's loving welcome.
Get down, you self-launched bomb, he shouted with great affection.
The two men and the Staffordshire came back to the van, and the Staffordshire jumped inside. The sooty Dalmatians, huddled together, were invisible in the darkness.
Want to ride inside, do you? Said Bill. Well, it is cold.
He put the tailboard up and shouted,
Next stop, St. John's Wood.
A moment later, the huge van took the road.
St. John's Wood? Surely that was where the splendid vet lived, quite close to Regent's Park. What wonderful, wonderful luck, thought Pongo.
Just then he heard a clock strike. It was still only 8 o'clock.
Missus, he cried, we shall get home tonight. We shall be home for Christmas.
Yes, Pongo, said Mrs. gaily, but she did not feel as gay as she sounded, for Mrs., who had been so brave, so confident up to the moment they had found the miracle, had suddenly been smitten by a great fear. Suppose the Dearleys did not recognize them, now they were black dogs. Suppose the dear, dear Dearleys turned them away.
She kept her fears to herself. Why should she frighten Pongo with them? How fast the miracle was travelling! She thought of the days it had taken her and Pongo to reach Suffolk on foot. Why, it seemed like weeks since they'd left London, yet it was only... how long? Could it be only 4 days? They'd slept one day in the stable at an inn, one day at the Deer Spaniels, one day in the Folly, part of a night in the barn after the escape from Hell Hall, then a day at the bakery. So much had happened in so short a time. And now, would it be all right when they got home? Would it? Would it? Meanwhile, Pongo had his own worries. He had been telling the Staffordshire all about Cruella, and had remembered what she had said that night at Hell Hall, how she intended to wait until people had forgotten about the stolen puppies, and then start her Dalmatian fur farm again. Surely he and Mrs. would get this lot of puppies safely home. It had never occurred to him that the Dearleys might not let them in. But what of the future? How could he make sure that other puppies did not end up as fur coats later on? He asked the Staffordshire's advice. "Why not kill this Cruella?" said the Staffordshire. "And I'll help you. Let's make a date for it now." Pongo shook his head. He had come to believe that Cruella was not an ordinary human, but some kind of devil. If so, could one kill her? In any case, he didn't want his pups to have a killer dog for a father. He would have sprung at Cruella if she'd attacked any pup, but he didn't fancy cold-blooded murder. He told the Staffordshire so.
"Your blood would soon warm up once you started the job," said the Staffordshire. "Well, let me know if you change your mind. And now you take a nap, mate. You've still got quite a job ahead of you."
The Staffordshire, like Mrs., wondered if the Dearleys would recognise these black Dalmatians, and if even the kindest pets would take in so many pups. But he said nothing of this to Pongo. Mrs., lulled by the movement of the van, had fallen asleep. Soon Pongo slept too, but their dreams were haunted by their separate anxieties. On and on through the dark went the mile-eating miracle. The Staffordshire woke them in good time. Every pup must be ready to leap out of the van the minute the tailboard was put down.
"Not that my dear pets would hurt you if they saw you," said the Staffordshire, "but it might cause delay. The van will stop in a big dark garage. Streak out, turn sharp left, and you'll be in a dimly lit mews and on your way. We'll say goodbye now. Can we send you news on the twilight barking?" asked Pongo.
"Hardly ever get the chance to listen to it," said the Staffordshire. "But I shall get news of you, all right. I'm a great one for newspapers. They pass the time on the road. Always plenty of them in the van. We use them for packing. Well, here we are."
The van stopped. The Staffordshire started to bark loudly.
"Let him out, Jim," said Bill, "before he breaks the sound barrier."
Down came the tailboard. Out shot the Staffordshire. This time he managed to knock Jim right down before turning to Bill, whom he tackled low.
"Just about winded me, he has," said Bill proudly. "Gah, you flying saucer, you!"
Jim got to his feet and spoke lovingly to the Staffordshire.
"If England had six of you, we shouldn't need no army," he said. "Come home and get your supper, you misguided missile."